Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Today, of course, is disappearance day of divine grace, basically born to be done this morning of the Bible. As you all know, the disappearance of Krishna and the disappearance of Krishna's pure devotees is not the end. Just like when the sun disappears at night, it's not the end of the sun. Krishna goes from place to place, that is universe to universe, with his leelas, and similarly his confidential devotees. They go from place to place to establish the mission of Lord Krishna, to bring Krishna consciousness to rebellious souls who have come to the material world to forget Krishna. But certainly, the disappearance of Srila Prabhupada from our ordinary vision is not the end. But at the same time, the disciples, they long for the physical presence of their spiritual master, and the physical disappearance of the spiritual master is, on one level, a great disaster. Therefore, in the Bhagavatam, it's stated that disciples, they pour out their hearts in tears upon the disappearance of the spiritual master, while at the same time knowing that his presence will be even stronger be felt on the spiritual platform. So, Krishna conscious life is full of all these different dimensions and aspects. Krishna consciousness is a multi-dimensional experience in which, on one hand, there's great sadness, on the other hand, there's great joy. So upon the disappearance of Srila Prabhupada, it was great, extraordinary sadness. I remember how it came to me. For some of us, unless you were right there in Vrindavan in India, and you could clearly see Srila Prabhupada's departure, you could see that he was in his last days. Most devotees, we just never thought that Srila Prabhupada would depart. In fact, I remember reading, whenever I would read his books where he talked about the spiritual master, the spiritual master, I always just thought, why does he say that? Why didn't he just put his name there? He is the spiritual master. Mm-hmm. He just never thought that there was anyone else or that Prabhupada would ever leave. Prabhupada had been sick before. He had been through life-threatening situations before with his health. Once he was very sick in Calcutta. And he said it was because the leaders were not following properly. Therefore, he was so sick. So we had seen this before, and devotees just thought that it's natural Srila Prabhupada's presence would go on and on, and he would only defy all the challenges, all the health challenges. I remember working at the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. By that time, I was in charge of the whole production of Srila Prabhupada's books. That had been my, my goal had been that if I can learn everything about producing Prabhupada's books, then I'll get his association. Because the book production manager always had direct access to Srila Prabhupada because the production of Srila Prabhupada was so dear to his heart. It was his heart. So I had this plan as a young devotee. I was always tired of seeing how all the leaders of the time, they got Prabhupada's association, but everyone else, you know, we had to really scramble to get something. So I thought, instead of becoming disgruntled, let me be proactive. as you would say, I thought I'll become expert at a service that I know will catch Prabhupada's attention. Because at that time, like by 1975, 76, the Prabhupada was always surrounded by a whole infantry of sannyasis. Although I've even seen him in Los Angeles, because I was in Los Angeles, I would see him like 3 times a year. Which is quite phenomenal. Many devotees would only see Prabhupada once in their life. Some in South America, his disciples never saw him. So to be in New York and then go to LA and then just saw Prabhupada all the time. Because those were the main places in North America. Even land from India in New York. So, and Los Angeles was the North American headquarters. So even though I saw him all the time, I was hankering for a personal association. So I came up with a plan how to get around the phalanx of sannyasis and temple presidents and like that. I said, I saw that the then production manager of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trustee was starting to slip. He never really recovered from the Chaitanya Charitamrita marathon. He was one of those who he liked to work hard in Krishna's service but didn't pay attention to his hearing and chanting. And so gradually he lost his steam. So I saw that was happening. Not that I was happy to see that happening, I was just being practical. I just saw it. I just saw this Prabhu's not going to make it. You're in Southern California looking up for sadhana. Very soon, Southern California Maya makes itself quite known to you. So, I went about, I went on a crash program for a year, just learning everything he did and becoming expert in all the aspects of the BBT book production. And actually, although he had faded in the end of 75, his official termination didn't come until maybe late 76. But by that time, I was already doing his job unofficially. So I remember when he was officially terminated, then the BBT trustee. So I don't know what we're going to do. We just lost our BBT production manager. Prabhupada's going to be furious. Who do we have to take up this critical role? What are we going to do? And I just happened to say, oh, I can do all that. I remember the BBT just said, all the stuff. Don't worry about it. I can do the job. So, I became the production manager. In the catbird seat. Now, all Prabhupada's the manuscripts would come directly from Prabhupada to me. I got around all the sannyasis, all the presidents, all the leaders. It's just going to be me and Prabhupada. Of course, now I realize I actually all the time had Prabhupada through his books. Prabhupada said actually his books are better than his personal association. And if you want to know him, to study his books, actually I already had. But as a younger devotee, I wanted a physical association. But sometimes, as younger devotees, you see the older, we see the leaders going off a bit, and so, I just want to directly deal with Prabhupada, the entire team of these guys. So, and then Prabhupada became very sick early in 77. I remember writing in my first letters about the books. By that time, he was getting more and more incapacitated. And then, remember getting the last chapter, the 13th chapter of the 10th canto, the Brahma Vimoka, the Vimoka or Brahma. I remember that chapter landed on my desk, the manuscript, the chapter in manuscript form. I started reading it. I was just so overwhelmed by how much Prabhupada had put into that chapter in his condition, even making jokes about forehead, Brahman, forehead scientists. Here's someone who's such a critical optimist, and then he put more of himself in those purports than actually in all the other cantos in that chapter. He just really turned it on. Revealed more. It's a better way of putting it. When I got to the end of the chapter, I was in tears, because from within my heart I knew this is the last chapter. For the first time the impact hit me that this is the last chapter of all speaking. By reading that chapter, the super soul in the heart, I just put my head on my desk and cried, this is it. Because our whole life at the BBT was just to be there with Prabhupada through the 10th canto. That was like the supreme destination. We were revved up so that we were right up with Prabhupada in terms of putting out books. We were just like a special forces, a group that just ate, slept, and drank, producing Bhagavatam. I was telling my Guru Rani how I had a special regulation worked out. 19 days straight, morning to night, just a marathon service, and then 3 days I would go to the Luna Beach Temple, which is a small temple on the beach in Southern California, about an hour and a half from Los Angeles. And there I would, kind of chill out a bit, hearing the chanting, associating with the devotees. Come back for another 19-day marathon stretch, 3 days, down to the beach. So we were really like in the BBT production crew, was like an Olympic team. We were at the top of our game. we got to the point where we were working on 7 books at the same time. So it was just really ecstatic, the absorption. Although we were in Los Angeles, we never went off the street where the BBT office was. To this day, I don't know much about Los Angeles, even though I stayed there for years. We just didn't know anything beyond the 5 minutes in one direction, 5 minutes walking the other direction. We just were so locked into our service day after day, month after month. And the whole goal was 10th canto. Wow, it's going to go to the 10th canto. And indeed he did. But then when I was reading this manuscript for chapter 13, I just knew this is it, this is the end. So I wasn't surprised 2 days later when, after the morning program, they greeted the deities, and then I saw the then GBC of Los Angeles go to the microphone and make an announcement. I already knew what they were announced. So when we announced the group of graduating the deities, they would show up and start us to the heart of this world. Immediately, some devotees just burst out crying. And one lady devotee just crying, oh no! I just became very quiet. So then 3 days after that, as according to Vaishnava, etiquette, there was a big feast. And everyone wondered what's life going to be like with Srila Prabhupada's physical presence not there anymore. So on the one hand, it was certainly a tragedy, a disaster. That's how the Shastra says you should look at it. Emotionally, it's a tragedy, but on the spiritual platform, of course, for those disciples who are sincere, they are linked with their spiritual master increases, but it's on the spiritual platform. And in order to be aware of the spiritual platform, one has to be more Krishna conscious. So it is a test. And also, Srila Prabhupada writes in the fourth canon of Bhagavatam that you have to expect there will be upheavals after the departure of a great acharya. You just have to. That's just the way it is. Naturally, there are going to be upheavals. You'd be a fool to think otherwise. Because the presence of such a great acharya is so rare that upon his departure, there has to be some chaos. There has to be some collapse. But, Srila Prabhupada writes, the sincere disciples try to keep things afloat. So these are the various dimensions involved. It's not just one thing, it's several things at the same time. And as you become more Krishna conscious, you'll be able to deal with a multi-dimensional approach to situations. Because Krishna consciousness is the most emotionally rich experience. Sometimes devotees have a fear that if I absorb myself in Krishna consciousness, I'll lose some of my emotional fulfillment and emotional development. They think like that because they don't know anything about bhakti emotions, which are the most rich, the most multi-dimensional, the most poignant. So here, on a disappearance day, you feel sadness, and at the same time you feel joy, knowing that on the spiritual platform there's no separation. That is the fact. Just like the sun is always here, even at night, we just don't see it. Still, we miss that physical association. Once Srila Prabhupada said that physical association with the Guru is for neophytes. Well, naturally, we all, okay, I'll stay a neophyte. But Srila Prabhupada wanted us to advance to the understanding of the spiritual platform in which the vani, the instruction of the spiritual master, is more important than the bhavu, the physical form. So we had to grow up and learn how to function on the vani platform. Meeting the spiritual master through his instructions, that means meeting Krishna through the instruction of the Guru. There's no other secret to meeting Krishna than meeting Krishna through the order of the spiritual master. That is seeing Krishna. This is bhakti mysticism. This doesn't make sense on the material platform. Meeting Krishna, seeing Krishna through the order of the Guru. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, stop trying to find Krishna searching under the bushes in your body. Just follow the order of the Guru. So, we're trying to take Srila Prabhupada's instructions deep into our heart. Srila Prabhupada was the most compassionate person you could ever imagine. To do what he did at such an advanced age, you'll find out what it's like as you start to age more. So as Sri Ramana was telling me, one old man, 75 or so, at the manor in England, he said, "You don't know. You don't know. You don't know. I know." I don't know. You don't understand. I understand. So the man explained, how could someone do what your leader did at his age? Impossible. I know. I'm 75. I know what it's like, how it feels. You don't know. Especially here at the loft, we remember Srila Prabhupada intensely because he was the first loft preacher, as Mahamudra Maharaj points out. He was the first one to do what he had to do in order to get people attracted to Krishna consciousness. I don't know if you know the scene in New York before Second Avenue. Everyone knows about the Second Avenue days when there was the storefront, Maxwell's Gifts. But that wasn't the beginning. The beginning was probably by doing loft programs in various artist lofts in the hip part of Greenwich Village in New York. It was the part of New York that, as a teenager, I would always walk through at night. I would leave home throughout the night. My father always said, you know, I went out village crawling out. yeah, it was the cool section. Turn off all phones, please. That was the section where all the counterculture was like that. So I walked in that area all the time, 16, 17, 18, 19 year old. So Prabhupada was doing loft programs, artist lofts. Artists would get a place like this. I know they had their paintings and they would invite people to look at the paintings, that cool kind of discussions. Like that. That was the hip thing to do then. So Prabhupada would have these gatherings and he would serve a little prasad, a little snack, finger food as you call it. And he would talk about India attracting people. And then he would add the philosophy. And he would allure them and talk about India, exotic stories of India, and then he would add in Bhagavad Dharma. And afterwards, of course, they'd be chanting, people really into the mantra meditation. They would just bring out the cartels and chant Hare Krishna. And then afterwards, he would go from person to person, asking them, how are you doing? How do you like the food? How's everything going? Like that. He would make small talk with the people. He just teach them Prabhupada. It's like a crowd we had Friday night. You can imagine Prabhupada going from person to person as they're holding their glasses of nectar. How are you doing? How's things going? How do you make small talk with them? So this way, Prabhupada was the first law preacher. So he would build up his contacts from those loft gatherings, and that's how they got Second Avenue. So, in this situation here, we can really intense to remember how he began the Krishna consciousness movement in this kind of setting. Srila Prabhupada was very dynamic. He was always thinking how to reach people without watering down the message of Krishna consciousness. It's one thing to try to reach people and water everything down. That's an easy thing to do. We only have to use a drop of a few of our principles. And yeah. Just tell people, hey, chant when you feel like it. Do the best you can about the regular principles. Change your color. But Prabhupada was always trying to reach out, expand Krishna consciousness without compromising this extraordinary thing. Even to this day, even Vaishnavas from other lines, they have a hard time understanding this dual aspect of Srila Prabhupada. Always reaching out, innovating, trying to widen the exposure of Krishna consciousness, but not compromising the core principles. Very difficult to do. The natural thing is that, people think this is too difficult, they're having a hard time following. We want to see many people hear something about Krishna. Let's just lower the standard. Prabhupada would always rail against that. He would use the example of milk. You can add water to the milk, so you dilute it, finally the milk is gone. Or you can boil the milk, and it becomes like here. So he preferred the boiling milk process. Make the milk so thick and creamy when you're making murthy. He wasn't into watering it. And he always stressed the training of devotees. In fact, right in the middle of the Hare Krishna boom in the early 70s, Prabhupada wrote many leaders the same letter. Now we have enough devotees, but I don't see that they're properly trained. The first business is to train the devotees we have. Of course, unfortunately, In many parts of the world, I see that the situation is we neither have enough devotees nor are they trained. But previously, we had enough devotees, but they weren't trained. So, to expand widely without compromising, this is Srila Prabhupada's genius. And he was always thinking how to increase, just like the first devotee who came to the museum, Krishna Krishna, and the Prabhupada gave him very innovative instructions. He told him, when you go there, don't open a temple. Get a farm and start Varnashram Dharma. Very interesting instructions. Unlike what Prabhupada gave in other parts of the world. In other words, we can see now that Prabhupada was, he was trying to get all aspects of the Krishna's mission going. So for some reason, he singled out New Zealand, and he told this first devotee, when you go there, don't open the temples. Get a farm, start working on. Anyway, eventually, devotees, because actually, Prabhupada was more innovative than the Hare Krishna movement. So a lot of times he would say these things, and the devotees couldn't pick up on it. Hare Krishna means, you know, temple means, you know, this means that. Just like in Los Angeles, when they got that building, that collection of buildings in Los Angeles that they have now to this day. It was, one of the buildings was a church, and it had pews in it, had an organ. Some of the devotees, they knew exactly what Prabhupada wanted. Clear out all the pews, all the seats, throw the organ out, clear the floor so we can, you know, have Hari Bolananda. But there was a place for that. There was another adjacent building, and Prabhupada had in mind, you know, use the other building for that. But for this building, the church building, he wanted the chairs there. The church chairs there. His idea was that, you know, upmarket people in Los Angeles could come and hear lectures sitting in chairs and have kirtans using the organ. So Prabhupada had walked into the church after they bought it and told devotees, keep the chairs. And then he even had a devotee get on the organ and play it. But as soon as Prabhupada left, some other devotees, you know, they just knew, it's Hare Krishna. Clear out the chairs, throw out the organ. You know? Yeah. We don't have furniture. We sit on the floor. Yeah. Hare Krishna. They, you know, they had it all stereotyped what Hare Krishna is. So Prabhupada was displeased when he found out they had thrown out all the chairs. So I showed you that often Prabhupada was much more innovative than his own disciples understood, while not compromising. Generally, we see two trends. Someone becomes innovative and they compromise. Someone doesn't compromise if they're not innovative. Prabhupada was inconceivably both at the same time, much more so than what his devotee can even figure out. So here he is. You can imagine the first devotee coming to New Zealand to preach. Now, you think Prabhupada would tell him, okay, just do whatever has been done elsewhere. No. Prabhupada told him, don't open a temple. Go get a farm, start farming. Prabhupada was thinking how to change all of society, how to provide an ideal example for people to see, ideal lifestyles for people to see. Anyway, they did build a temple with the Hare Krishnas. They did make a temple. They got a temple. Then when Prabhupada found out about that, okay. He's willing to work on the situation. So why just one temple? Put a temple in every town. This is one of the few places where Prabhupada ever said that. Why one temple? Put a temple in every town of this country. So, these are very interesting instructions. Both these instructions are unconventional. You won't find them repeated in other. You won't find the problem repeated these instructions in other places. So, it's hard though to say, well, Prabhupada wanted a farm of Varnashram Dharma and so everything else. Because Prabhupada would shift. He would work with the scene. He was dynamic. He was flexible. All you can say is that he thought Varnashram Dharma was so significant that he was willing to say no over the temple start upon Varnashram Dharma. Another thing he said when he came to New Zealand, he spoke at various programs, and he commented, there are some good prospects among the people. Some persons who came to see the University of Auckland, for example, one I know, Bhakti Tanimar, that's when he first saw Prabhupada, and he went over to London and became a devotee. So Prabhupada knew that there are good prospects in New Zealand. So our quest is how to always keep expanding Krishna consciousness without compromising, without watering down. I mean, that requires intelligence from Krishna. That is my conclusion after all these years. It requires intelligence and power from Krishna. How to be so compassionate. And our compassion for the people is based on our hearts opening up to their suffering and our knowledge that if we can introduce the Prabhupada's books to them, they'll finally get some real knowledge. This is an unfortunate thing that has happened since the Prabhupada's departure, is that the emphasis on his books, the emphasis on distributing his books has gone down. So the Prabhupada was very, very focused. I've been explaining. He was the master of the focus. And we can see, almost 30 years after his departure, there have been other Vaishnava, Gaudiya Vaishnava preachers, but none of them had the focused master that Srila Prabhupada had. Prabhupada knew how to get the job done without going off on tangents. Nothing extra, no glitz, but just glide back to Godhead. He was a master at that. He didn't allow his disciples to get caught up in all these intricacies and tangents and Gaudiya Vaishnava esotericism. He just do like this, as I told you, at the end of your life, you'll go back to God. One of my godbrothers, A.C. Bhakti by Bhagavan Maharaj, Prabhupada just wrote him, you just do like this. You study my books, you chant Hare Krishna, you remain engaged in Krishna's service, you'll see Krishna in this lifetime. That's he just gave the prescription. You just do this, and this is what happens. Just like at the BBT, after we finished with Chaitanya Charitamrita Marathon, Prabhupada just wrote, Krishna is a property of his devotee. Everyone's afraid of Krishna, but Krishna's afraid of Mother Yashoda. So the devotee is running after. So we're running after the devotee of Krishna, shouting Krishna, Krishna. We're not running after Krishna, we're running after Krishna's devotee. And then he said, by your efforts in this marathon, all of you will go back to God. So that was his transcendental genius, the master of the focus. You need to go back to Godhead. You do like this, you do like that, you go back to Godhead. Not all this stuff. Complexities and various shades and permutations and so much Vaishnava esoterica and no. And you'll see that in Prabhupada's books. Don't ever make the mistake of getting tired of reading Prabhupada's books, thinking, oh, we need to find out other things. Prabhupada's books are inconceivably brilliant because they focus you for going back to Godhead. They give you what you need to know to go back to Godhead in this present age of color. That's why you'll find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya is instructing Satana Goswami, one of the principles of devotion is you don't read too many books. And in the purport, Prabhupada comments that in our Krishna consciousness movement, we have limited our study of Vedic knowledge to four books. So that we've limited our study to four books. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Samhita. Of course, Krishna is also Bhagavatam. So these four books are sufficient for spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. The principle is, he said, that you study a few books thoroughly. Not that you jump through all these different shastras for the purpose of quoting them to establish yourself as a pundit. No. You study a few books thoroughly and you learn the philosophy that way. So this is, again, the focus. Your job is to go back to Godhead, not to dilly and dally and get caught up in so many Vaishnava controversies and complexities. Srila Prabhupada was the master of making short shrift of all that. Just like the jiva controversy, some devotees like to endlessly spend their whole life caught up in that. Prabhupada's answer. Originally, we were with Krishna. Even if you say you came from the Brahmajyoti is not your original home. So even if you're in the Brahmajyoti, you're fallen. Because unless you're with Krishna, you're fallen. Anyway, why worry about it? The point is, how are you going to get out of your spiritually sick condition now? So, when Prabhupada was present, he said, don't worry about something. Devotees wouldn't worry about it. So don't worry about it. What's the big deal? Originally, we're all Krishna, somehow we fell into material. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. That's what we always do. We make short shrift of all of these complexities. Just do like this, you go back to God. He told one Sankirtan lady, just distribute books every day of your life. One day you'll see Krishna on the street. On the street. That's what he did. He told devotees, no stray. If someone just takes one of his books in their hand, without even buying it, but just appreciates it, this is a nice book, and then gives it back to the distributor, that appreciation is enough to give them a human form of life and an expert. So, Prabhupada would point these things out. Just keep the focus. And we've never seen anyone able to anywhere come near imitating that. To this day, it just hasn't happened. He knew what it takes for everyone to go back to Godhead solidly. I was speaking in India, and I was saying how Prabhupada knew Westerners. He knew their psychology better than everyone. He knew how Westerners could go back to Godhead. He knew that they weren't, you know, born on the bank of a Ganga, you know, wearing a gumshoe. He knew what it takes for people in the West to go back to God. And then some Indian devotees, they said, Maharaj, I'm going to tell you something also. He knew Indians better than anybody. He knew how we could go back to God too. But no one has had, we can see now, no one has had the success in India that Prabhupada's movement has had. He knew how to get Indians off the, yes, I know everything about Krishna. He knew how to get them off that platform into action. Which is very difficult. With Westerners, you got to deal with degradation. Western life means illicit sex and intoxication. Dealing with India means, you know, the familiarity with Krishna. Yes, I know. Yes, my grandmother is. Good thing he said when I was little. Yes, I know. I know. I know. The Prabhupada can cut through all that. And get action. That was his specialty. Action in Krishna consciousness. So certainly, to learn the Prabhupada's disappearance was very low. I myself have realized it. When those kind of things happen, the effect is for many years. Even years after, the ones will say that you're really recovered from that, or to be years to come to grips with that. It's like a death of a family member. Except that Prabhupada's disappearance involves, as I said, the mixture of lamentation as well as joy, because we know on the spiritual platform everything continues. And somehow or other, Srila Prabhupada makes it clear to his sincere followers that he's still present. I know so many grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada, who had such moving dreams of him. So many grandsons of Prabhupada report. Prabhupada had very intimate dreams of Prabhupada. One devotee was telling me, the young devotee, the grandson of Prabhupada, he had a dream in which he saw Prabhupada, they're just not, just giving him books like they used to. I don't know what to do. I mean, it's just a hope to see your fever in the day like it used to. Prabhupada told him, tell all the book distributors, anyone who distributes books, I'll personally take back the Godhead. So, he's a young devotee, but he had that experience. So, we're dealing with something that is beyond our comprehension. Prabhupada would not reveal his original constitutional position with Krishna. He just said, if you knew who I was, in the spiritual world, you'd change. That's all he said. Mm-hmm. Not reveal what his rasa or Krishna is. He always speculated about this, that, the other. The last chapter that he finished was about the cowherd boys. He must be a cowherd boy. He was called Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan. He must be a cowherd. He never probably never said this way or that, but he's also a strong Bala Krishna. All he said was, if you knew who I was in the spiritual world, you'd faint. And he spoke about, sometimes he spoke intimately about this, being sent here to the material world by Krishna. When he came to Bombay, it turned out a devotee had forgotten his yellow fever vaccination card, and so they wouldn't let him into the country, into India, his own country. They had to put him in quarantine for like 10 days to make sure he didn't have any contagious disease, all because his disciple had forgotten his yellow fever vaccination card. Shows you how, to some extent, the behavior of disciples affects the life of the spiritual master. What can you do? Prabhupada tolerated the soul. Sometimes when it's difficult, cooperating, tolerating devotees, you should think, well, Prabhupada tolerated us. What was it like for Prabhupada to tolerate us? Even from the material point of view, Prabhupada was an aristocratic Bengali. Let's speak of the spiritual point of view. Yet he tolerated such nonsense. So, we can meditate on Srila Prabhupada's compassion. How to expand Krishna consciousness while at the same time not compromising. He talked about this when he was quarantined in Bombay. He turned to some devotees who were with him, accompanying him in quarantine. The pulse started talking. I did not want to come here. The devotees were talking about quarantine. Oh, sorry, Prabhupada. We're sorry. You know, you blew it. You forgot your yellow fever backstage. I did not want to come to this material world, but Krishna told me. I said, horrible. I don't want to go there. But Krishna told me, just go there, write your books, everything will be all right. So, those are some rare glimpses. This last week I met an Indian man in Wellington, whose family is in Bombay, and he told me, my great-grandfather and my grandfather, they remember that Prabhupada stayed at our house before he went to the U.S. for the first time in the early 60s. He stayed at our house. And he said, my great-grandfather told me one time, this Swami, he started shouting. We all ran. What's wrong? What's wrong? I saw him. I saw Krishna. He told me that his great-grandfather told him that. Shouting, we ran to see the plane. I saw Krishna. You remember, the whole family remembers that. So, how are we going to expand Srila Prabhupada's desires? That is the heartfelt intent that I would like everyone to have. How to expand your public's heartfelt desire. He's given us so much. We can't keep up. We've seen that almost 30 years after Prabhupada's departure. We can't keep up with all that he's given us. It takes a lifetime or two just to get to the bottom of it. The more you read his books, the more you realize you don't know. You just go on and on reading to the bottomless pit. The more you preach, the more you realize there's so much more preaching to do. The more you chant Hare Krishna, you realize there's so much more chanting Hare Krishna. On this disappearance day of Srila Prabhupada, let us try to commit ourselves more to a life of sacrifice, regardless of our different ashrams and lifestyles. Still, yajna has to be the center of everyone's life. There's different types of maya at different times. Right now, in the Western world, intensely there's the maya of selfishness. Just out and out selfishness, without even any philanthropic or charitable icing on top. Previous decades of, you know, charitable, philanthropic icing decorating the cake. That's all gone now. Just me and mine. Go for it. If this is being spread all over the world, yes, even Ukraine, even Russia, this is what's going on. You and yours. Get your mobile phone, get your flash car, get your widescreen TV, home entertainment system. This is what's happening today. People don't even know how to have a family anymore. Families are not important. What's important is you get yours. That's all that matters these days. Whether mother and father stay together, big deal, who cares? Just get yours. That's all that's going on today. Nobody cares really about their nationality anymore. Everyone's part of the global internet, television, entertainment experience. People have just become consumers, that's it. And this is the gospel that's spread all over the world. Buy. Define yourself by what you buy, but you must buy. You. What about you? Think about you. Forget about family bonds, family ties. Forget about social obligations, obligations to your country. Just you and yours. What you want. Everyone thinking like that. That makes it difficult to teach Christian consciousness. Because people, let's say in the 60s and 70s, when Prabhupada started his movement in the West, the young people were so idealistic. You know, we're going to save the world, we're going to do something for the world, we're going to make everyone love each other, you know, flower power. All you have to do is get all the people together and agree to love. No one needs money, we just need love. And love, of course, man, lots of marijuana, LSD, and, you know, free sex, you know, that would save the world. But at least there was some desire that, yeah, we've got to change things. That desire was there, we've got to change society. Forget that now. It's gone. Everything is just out and out, me, ruthless. So this makes it more difficult for preaching, because people don't really care about society. They don't care about anything except, what do I have? Do I have the latest home entertainment system? I have all the things I want. That's it. Yet, meanwhile, anybody in the brain can see society collapsing so much. Those of you who are preaching in the New Zealand cities, you see what's happening to the youth. Christ Church, especially, is a disaster in terms of youth. And often, so. It's a little bit different, but not much. Just think what this country will be like in 30 years from now. Children growing up without parents, with no idea how to have a family. No one has any honor. No one has any integrity. get a partner, last as long as you can, and move on. That's what's going on. So we have a great responsibility to Srila Prabhupada, to bear the torchlight of real knowledge, real spiritual experience. Those of you who are serious about that, please beg Krishna, please beg Srila Prabhupada for purity to carry on this great work. Everyone is being selfish, but for us, it's no time for being selfish. And make sure you don't get caught up in this selfish atmosphere all around. It can be difficult sometimes if you lose your focus. So much of our spiritual life is based on maintaining our focus. If amidst this ocean of selfishness that's masquerading as human civilization, if you can sacrifice for Krishna, you'll become very dear to Krishna. Because Krishna is looking for those who he can work through. Who can carry on Prabhupada's work? His mission will not fail. Someone will carry on. As you know, I put in my Vyasa Puja offering some years ago. Prabhupada's solution to the ups and downs of spiritual institutions. That even if all the temple presidents go, all the leaders go, all the majorities go, still, my books are everywhere. Someone will read them and they'll understand completely how to start the whole Hare Krishna movement all over. So there's something going on in here that's much bigger than us. We have to always remember that. For today, I'm sure Prabhupada's disappearance. There's beg him for his blessings and mercy to go on serving his desires, his mission. That's the job of everyone in the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. You may be a disciple of a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, but we all have the same purpose to please Srila Prabhupada. That's the unique thing about ISKCON. Both the gurus and the disciples have the same purpose to satisfy Srila Prabhupada's desires. In other words, not letting us say, okay, here's my plans, here's my vision, satisfy that. And that's actually allowed in, you know, Vaishnava culture, but it's kind of special in that it's focusing on Prabhupada's desires. So in this time, both the gurus and the disciples, they're trying to carry out Prabhupada's desires. That's the way it should be. And every devotee, through Srila Prabhupada's books and instructions, has Srila Prabhupada as their siksha guru. You take advantage of his siksha, especially his books, you'll find all that you need to go back to God and help others to go back to God. Especially here in Auckland, we really need Prabhupada's mercy. Prabhupada came to Auckland. We need to revive in the city of Auckland preaching of Krishna consciousness, the book distribution, the outreach. 1/3 of the population in New Zealand lives in Auckland. It's not easy, but through this challenge, we'll become purified. We'll attract Krishna's attention. That's what every devotee should want to do. Let me attract Krishna's attention, that Krishna will just look upon me one time. So, these services are opportunities to get Krishna's mercy. And we should take it very seriously. Disappearance days are great days for begging for an appearance of more spiritual potency for getting the job done. To do Krishna Pandali, and then we're going to do flowers, everyone. We need enough for three furrows. I'm going to say Prabhas Pranam mantra, and then Pushpanjali, everyone throws, and the mantra. Again, Pushpanjali, you throw, and third time. So you need a flower hand for three throws. All right.